Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm wonderful today, Sal. How about yourself?
You're always wonderful. Doing great.
Awesome.
We got another special guest in the podcast room with us today, Dan Vague.
Hi, everybody.
Morning, Dan.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, back. It's been about 1 year, I think, since you were in here. Last time you were in here, you had just taken over this position. It was about a year ago.
Right. That year went fast.
That did. So now vice president of swine production.
Right.
But we're going to get back into talking about pigs. But first, we have the question of the day. And this one, I hope this is a funny one, but what was your worst day of work and why?
This is going to sound like a canned answer, I think. But I thought and thought about this and thought, boy, I don't know of a bad day of work. You know, I don't know that there's been any really, really bad days. But then I thought, back when I was running the branch at Brownstown, we were working with anhydrous ammonia one day and bleeding the system off. And of course, it's a hot day that day. We're working on some valves and such. And I had a valve crack open and shot onto my leg, and ammonia went up my pants, obviously to the groin area.
There's when you go up pants, eventually you hit.
Yeah. And talk about a bad day. That really burned. Then the funny part of it is,
I don't know that there's anything funny about this.
Well, I think the funny part of it was I had some other guys around there and they helped me. I said, grab me the water hose. And so they got the water hose for me and I stuffed it down my pants to try to fix the problem. Well, I had a couple customers come in right at that time. Here I am standing next to the riser with a garden hose running down my pants.
Oh my gosh.
Please tell me there's a picture or video.
No. Thank goodness it was before all the
cell phone pictures
and all that. Yeah. All we had was flip phones at the time.
That would be on the worst day of work or something on YouTube now. Right. Oh my gosh.
Come through it. All right. Everything was fine, but yeah.
I'm glad you said that, 'cause I'm sure everybody be wondering. That is a bad day at work, Dan.
That was my worst day at work. And to have the customers come in and see me with the garden hose running down my pants. So.
Boy. Oh, Jeff, can you?
I've never had that happen. Thank you. Thankfully. I would say that probably one of the worst days was the worst sales call that I ever had. Turned out to be funny, but this is back. I just graduated from college. I started my first job. I'm traveling around the state of Michigan, calling on ag retailers, and I'm cold calling. So I would literally pull into a town, and there's no internet. There's nothing back then. You've got a outdated book for the Michigan Ag, Chem, and Fertilizer dealers. And
trying to find them.
You got paper maps. You just roll into the town. I'd usually start looking for, you know, grain legs or, you know, legs at a fertilizer plant, and then just wander or find a railroad tracks and think, maybe they're on a railroad track. So I find this place. I go in. It's an independent dealer, and I do not know the guy's name.
What state is this in?
Michigan. So I go in there and talk to the secretary. I gave her my business card and told her that, you know, I was basically cold calling and wanted to meet the manager. And she went back into his office. She goes, he's got somebody with him. Okay. So I'm sitting out there and I probably sit out in that office for 20 minutes at least. Finally, the guy comes out. He's got somebody with him. They leave. I introduce myself to him, shake his hand, tell him my name. And he does not reciprocate and tell me his name. And I'm sitting there going, okay. Still don't know the guy's name, but, you know, hey, no big deal. He's going to take me back into his office and there'll be a nameplate or plaques or certificates or diplomas or something on the wall that'll have his name on it. I sit down, I'm looking around, nothing, no name. And then come to find out that, you know, so I'm talking, you know, trying to get some conversation started and stuff. And this is a big burly guy who's got a great big bushy beard. And he's just intimidating the crap out of me. And I'm green. So we keep talking to him. I figured out that, yeah, he's giving me short answers and really not opening up much. And I'm like, it's time to end this one. And he's already told me that the company I work for is also his competition. And I said, oh, so you've got my company has a plant nearby. where's that located? He goes, stand up, look out the window.
Oh,
our property joined on the backside.
No.
I didn't know this. So, yeah. So I'm on the wholesale side. They're on the retail side. So I'm like, all right, we're just going to end this one. So as we stand up, you know, he stands up from his desk and I'm standing up to leave. I shake his hand and I said, by the way, I did not catch your name. And he looks me right in the eye. He goes, I didn't offer it. You didn't ask. And I said, okay. I said, can I ask for your name? He got a big smile on his face, told me his name as he shook my hand and he said, tell your dad I said hi. This guy had sweated me out there. Him and the guy were back there talking. They were laughing about the grief. He knew who I was when he saw the card. He was an old friend of my father's from the old days in the fertilizer industry. And that dude swept me out there and then made me sweat through the whole call. Ended up being a great customer and stuff. But that first day, he ran me through the ringer. So it was my worst day at work. Ended up being a funny story. So
yeah, that was back in the Terra days?
Back in the Terra days.
I'll be darned. Yeah.
His name was George Anton. Great guy.
Huh. That's a neat story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, mine would have been back in the Terra days also, as it turns out. So that tells you about that time in our lives.
Sal and I officially put that company out of business.
Yeah. We both started back with the same company. And actually, the cooperative system, Land O'Lakes, bought the retail distribution assets from that company in 1999. But it was before that. It was in the early 90s. And there was a product for corn, and you would know this one, called Sutan. Sutan Plus.
Smells so great.
Oh, my gosh. And so what we would do sometimes with chemistry back then is instead of spraying it, we could mix it up with fertilizer. And that was called you would impregnate it in the fertilizer, and then you could go out and spread it on the field and kind of save the grower an application. If he had done some tillage, that way he wouldn't have to pay to have it sprayed. You could actually spread it on with the fertilizer. And the chemistry was all mixed in with the fertilizer. Well, we had a dry truck. The belt broke. Of course, back then it was the chains, but the drag chain broke and had to scoop the fertilizer load off that was impregnated with Sutan.
How hot was it?
It was a very hot day. And you know how to finish that because it's got a very high vapor pressure. And I mean, it was the worst day. And to this day, I can't hardly even think about that product without getting nauseous and just getting sick.
So you asked for the worst day, but you said has to be funny. So that's just funny because you were suffering? Or can you laugh, about it now?
I can laugh about it now. That's okay. Right. It got a bit build up some character. I don't think Dan's was that funny. It's a little funny, but
the image of the garden hose down your pants. Right. That's pretty funny.
I laugh about it now.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Oh my gosh. Well, Dan, it's been a year since you've been with us on the high ground,
right.
And Gary Calloway had retired and you followed in his footsteps. You've been kind of training for that position for several years.
Right.
So tell us about this last year. So what's been going on with SwineLink? What's changed between that, some big changes between that time and now?
I won't say there was a lot of big changes that we made. I actually kind of had a philosophy, when I did take over, not to make too many big changes. Obviously we weren't real profitable the last couple of years and we want to try to turn that around. But as far as real big changes in the system, we didn't make any. I think our system is set up to perform well, and we just wanted to maintain that performance. And we worked on a few little items to kind of clean things up a little bit, but we didn't change a whole lot in the system right now. We're looking at some changes going forward. You know, possibly some changes in our nutrition and things like that to maybe save some money here or there. But I don't think there's any big changes have to occur in our system at this point. I think it's a good system and works well. And there's not a lot of big changes that have to be made.
I remember, looking at some of those feed efficiencies, studies. And at that time it was Jackson Jennings, but they were always at the top there. And that's one of the things I learned was that if you don't have that efficiency, then you're not going to be profitable.
Right.
And that's one of my takeaways. Calloway would be proud of me for remembering that.
He would be. Yeah. We do focus a lot on feed efficiency. And I think we do a very good job at that. Some of that is the nutrition program. Some of that's genetics. Of pigs. And some of that is the management of them in the barns, you know, keeping feed in front of them, feeder adjustments. But we do maintain a very good feed efficiency. You know, as far as industry standard, we're right up at the top. So we do a good job with that.
Yeah. You talked about, you know, maybe going through a couple of rough years or profitability's down. Is a lot of that just a result of the cycles that these livestock markets go through?
Yeah, some of it would be cycles. The hog market has been down last couple of years. This last year there was some opportunities in the markets to make a little bit of money, but it's just been a rough cycle for hog growers. We've got a lot of pigs out there right now. We've been in expansion mode for several years, adding a lot of sows and adding production. And I think we finally come to the point where we've just got so much volume out there that something's going to have to change. It's just not as profitable as it was. There's just not enough demand for the product that we've got out there. And it's not that demand has dropped. We've just overproduced right now.
Oh, good. So. Well, that'd be interesting. That's a good lead-in question. So kind of tell us about the Swine Link. The way Premier Ag is set up, and it's a fairly, I guess, unique model. I don't know if there's many that are similar, but kind of tell us about the ownership. Who owns what in this partnership of feeding out these pigs?
Yeah, so we started this system back in 2004. I wasn't around at the time. I came in at 2008. But they wanted to start a system that growers could come back in, younger members of the farm could come back in and have some income through the hogs. So what they did is growers would build buildings. They own the building. The co-op would own the pigs and feed the pigs. And the growers take care of the pigs. So we pay them a contract payment to take care of those pigs through the feeding cycle. Works well for us. The grower didn't have to own the pig. They just have to have the building and have a contract site. So they don't have all the risk in owning the livestock. And we do all the marketing. We have the contracts with the packers. And so it makes it kind of nice for them that they have this, and it's a steady income, but they don't have to worry about the risk of,
sure,
of owning the hog.
So you said that we feed the pigs. So the pigs are Premier Ags.
Right.
And the feed is Premier Ags.
We own the feed. Premier Ag owns the feed.
And then the farmer owns the barns and the labor and the feed tanks, I guess, probably too.
Yeah, own the feed tanks.
Everything
that goes with the site, they own that.
Okay.
And when we own the feed, make the feed, deliver it, the grower actually has no, all they have to do basically is keep feeders full, open the bins and keep feeders full. We do all the ordering of the feed and all that.
Wow. Seems like a really nice setup for a young, even a older person, but if somebody starting off, that seems like a really neat way to get into production agriculture.
Right. I think it is. I think there's opportunities there. And, you know, I think going forward, we would like to expand that system and make that available to more people. At this point, it's not real feasible for people to build barns.
It's expensive.
It's pretty expensive. Building costs are high. And then with interest rates where they're at, it's hard to cash flow a barn right now. But we're continually looking at that. And as interest comes down or building costs come down, we'll look at that and see, you know, if we can expand for sure.
It's, you know, with Premier owning all these hogs and stuff. And I think I know the answer to this, but I guess for our listeners, can you explain, I mean, there's a big responsibility, with owning livestock today and for the non-ag public and stuff and all the steps that you guys go through to make sure that we're doing everything in a safe, humane manner. Can you kind of recap that for?
Right. We're basically through National Pork Board, all of our sites are pork quality assurance audited, and we just went through several of them audits here about a month ago. But we have a third party come in and take a look at our barns, make sure that we're taking care of them, you know, in a good manner. They look at all the pigs, make sure that they've got feed and water, make sure that all our records are kept up to date. We keep records on everything, daily temperatures, water usages, medication records. That's all got to be written out and kept on hand for 2 years. And they audit that every once in a while. Like I said, we just went through one to make sure everybody was doing what they're supposed to do. Environmentally, we keep all the hogs in buildings. They don't see the outside. And that helps. We can keep the environment at a constant. They don't get cold. The coldest the barns ever get, even in the middle of the winter, 65 degrees.
Wow.
Now, in the summertime, they'll get whatever the outside air temperature is. That's what it's going to be. We don't have air conditioning in them, but they don't ever get cooler than 65 degrees. And inside them buildings, we keep, you know, try to keep as much as possible rodents out. We keep birds out. So we're preventing the spread of disease on them hogs also.
Hmm. Explain the summertime, kind of the fans and the curtains and the airflow through those buildings.
Sure. That's all automated. All of our environmental controls in the barn are automated. It goes off of temperature probes inside the rooms. And as temperatures increase, we have a set point basically where we want the room temperature to be. And as temperature increases, it'll kick on fans, you know, one by one as the temperature does go up. We've got curtains, automatic curtains on the barns that will raise and lower to try to keep the airflow flowing through there and keep a temperature. When it gets above 80 degrees, we do have mister systems in there that will kick on and mist the pigs for a couple minutes, and then they shut off, and then that air blown over them, that evaporative cooling will cool the pig. So, yeah, we've got a lot of good technology that we use in the summer to try to keep the pigs cool.
I went through one of those audits one time in a previous life going through. I was amazed at all the stuff. I mean, it's they go to a lot of detail, and right. you got to check a lot of boxes to make sure you pass those audits. So that's great to hear. I think that sets. We need that message to get out to our non-ag public, friends and stuff out there, or even families to understand that, you know, we've got a safe, sustainable food source, and we go to a lot of time and expense to make sure that it's humanely raised and harvested.
Right. Well, as a producer, a healthy, happy pig is going to perform the best, right? And we're going to make the most money off of that. So, I mean, that's our goal, is to keep them as comfortable and happy as possible. Right.
Absolutely.
The just thinking about you talked about this managing disease, and that comes up a lot when you were talking about livestock and keeping them healthy. I don't understand why people are concerned about antibiotic free or I mean, we, it seems like you want to keep your animals. Why would you withhold medicine for a sick animal that a person would take? But if one of the hogs are sick, that hog is put into a special pen by itself, right? Or with other sick pigs, and it never goes back in with the rest of them.
Right.
So kind of explain that.
So, we are not antibiotic free. We do use antibiotics in our system. And we do feed some antibiotics to prevent diseases, basically. We make sure that we find out what kind of diseases we have present in our barns. We know that working with a veterinarian, and we've got what we call antibiotic pulses in the feed. So we know when those diseases are going to occur in the barn, and we put antibiotics in place of them right ahead of that so that we can minimize losses of production in the barn at the time. If we find pigs that are sick in there, we do give them injectable antibiotics. Those pigs are removed from their pen, put into a hospital pen in the barn, and that's where they'll stay the rest of the time they're in that barn. And it just gets them away from the healthy pigs that are going to be competitive towards them.
Oh,
it kind of gets them away from that, so they don't have so much competition on them, and that way they can heal up and perform just as well as the others when we move them out of that pen.
I never really thought. I thought it was more for just keep it was for spread, but it's for to keep the other pigs from picking on them.
Yeah, most of it's just to keep the others the healthy pigs. Pigs will work will pick on each other.
Yeah,
well, they've got a hierarchy of pecking order in the pens, and if there's one sick, they will pick on it. So you get it out of there to get it away so they can heal up.
Yep. But yeah. The antibiotics, though, I mean, when they go to market, talk about regulations. It is very strict about
withdrawal periods.
Yes. Thank you. That's the right term, Jeff.
And that's why we keep records in the barn. If we do give antibiotics, we write that down on that sheet. We'll give you what day that those pigs can be marketed. According to the antibiotic we use, they have different withdrawal periods, and none of our pigs go to market with any antibiotics.
No.
You know, all of that gets out of their system before they go.
It just, I don't know. It just seems odd that people think that they're talking about antibiotic free. I feel like that's almost like cruelty to animals that you would let a animal be sick and not try to take care of it. That doesn't make sense to me.
I don't understand it either. And I think people just need to understand that we are giving antibiotics, but we make sure that that's all out of their system before they go to market.
Yep.
And that goes for all the meat that's processed in the U.S. that goes through
USDA. True.
Yeah,
whether it's chickens or beef or anything else.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe some marketing involved, you know, if you had your gluten-free orange juice for breakfast and
gluten-free orange juice.
It was cage-free too.
Hey, you're on it today.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, what about some fun facts with these pigs? When they show up at our barns, I guess, well, tell us where they come from.
All of our pigs come out of sow units out in Western Illinois. We own sows in a system that Carthage Veterinary Services manage all that. So we just own sows in four different commercial units. So all of our pigs come from there. All of our system is what we call wean to finish. So the pigs come to us and they're just freshly weaned off of the sows. They're about 21 days old, weigh about 12 and a half pounds on average. We've got 4,000 head barns here that we bring them into, and we'll fill that barn in usually about a week, 5 days to 5 to 7 days. So, but that works well for us having ownership in those sows, 'cause we know what kind of pig we're getting and the health statuses being able to fill all of our barns out of one sow unit, you know, helps mitigate some of the disease pressures also.
Well, and they, people may not know, but inside of the barns, I mean, very few people would ever see inside of one of these. And that's because it's kept clean.
Yeah.
But those barns, between, groups of pigs that come in, those are power washed and scrubbed down to every single pipe and feeder, right?
Everything in them is pressure washed, cleaned up. There's no dust, manure, any of that's all gone, washed away. We let that dry out, and then they'll come in with a disinfectant, and they'll completely spray the whole barn with a disinfectant and let that dry out before the pigs will come in.
That's amazing, because you think a pig's been wallowing around in a mud hole, but in our barns, I mean, the thing is like immaculate clean on the inside when they come in.
Right. And our guys are expected to shower in when they enter. Anybody enters that barn, you take a shower, you change into clothes and boots that are already inside that barn. And that way we're not carrying any disease into the barn. So yeah, our biosecurity is pretty strict on that.
Even the terminology, the pig side is called the clean side.
It is called the clean side.
Where the pigs
are. We come in the dirty side.
We come in from the dirty side.
Shower in, shower out.
Yep.
And that was new to me, because it was like, okay, we're all the same farm, but you know, I was leaving one farm going to another farm. So I showered in, I showered out. I got to the next farm, I showered in, and I showered out.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, you guys, how many showers you take a day?
I think the most I ever took was like 12 or 12, 14.
And those are real showers.
Those are real showers.
Yeah. It's not like wash your hands and.
Yeah. Yeah. It's through a shower, completely change, shower through, put coveralls on, coveralls and boots that were in the barn. So.
Yeah. And we appreciate it. You smell great. I mean, yeah. You know.
Appreciate that.
Oh boy. What else we want to cover, Jeff?
I, you know, it's amazing how the swine industry has changed. You know, growing up, you know,
yeah,
I had pigs in 4-H, and I had 10, 15, 20 sows, you know, just as a kid all through high school and stuff. But you know, I farrowed in pens. We'd sold the crates in the farrowing house, so I just built pens and turned them out. And you know, I thought we were really raising pigs, but when I see the size and scale that you guys do it on, and all the different changes and how much more efficient they are, how long does it take to feed a pig out, and how much do you have to, how much corn goes into that pig when you feed a pig out? Put you on the spot.
Actually, from that 12 and a half pounds, we try to get the pigs to roughly 280 to 285 pounds. Okay. And from the day we bring them in, the first ones we market is usually in about 140 days. So about four and a half months.
Wow.
We're starting to move them pigs out the door from 12 and a half to 280 pounds. They're going to eat about 540 pounds of corn in that span.
How much soybean meal would you
eat? Soybean meal would be about 110 to 150 pounds of soybean meal. And total feed that they'll consume in their life is about 675 pounds roughly in our system.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, I think I had to feed 2 tons back in the day to get the pigs to gain that fast, that much.
I think technology's changed, genetics have changed on that aspect, and also having them inside where you have a controlled environment helps with that also.
You know, you hear people say, oh, he's fat as a hog or, you know, something like that. But these hogs are really lean.
They're really lean. And I'll be honest, in my opinion, I think hogs are probably a little bit too lean at this point. I think there's studies been done and people want a little bit more of taste or flavor in their pork. And so I think we're to the point where we're not going to go any leaner with the pigs at this point.
Other countries, I know we export some pork to other countries. Are some of those other countries, are they wanting more fat in their hogs? Or you see differences?
I think, of course, China's the biggest consumer of pork in the world. And I just seen a study here the last couple weeks that they went into grocery stores in China and looked to see what kind of pork they're consuming. And they're leaning more now towards with pork with a little more fat in it, a little more flavor in it. So I think we're seeing that shift to where we're going to probably have, you know, probably decrease the lean in those hogs going forward.
I've been there. I didn't see anything that resembled a pork chop. I ate stuff that they said was pork, but
right.
It was
parts.
Yeah, it was different.
But these pigs, they're not lean because they get all the food they want, right? I mean, they get plenty of feed.
Oh, feed's in front of them all the time.
Yeah.
24/7, they can go to the feeder and eat feed. It's genetics. It's genetic and how we feed them. You know, more lysine levels, amino acid levels are up, protein levels are up. And so it's just kind of the way we feed them now. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. What about... and this is going back to several years ago. They were going for export, and they were actually adding some kind of, this is the wrong term, essential oils type stuff at the feed mill to try to help flavor the pork. Is that possible? This was going to Japan, I think, and I can't remember what kind of oil it was, but it was some kind of food extract type oil like anise or something like that. But
right. And I think that, today I think there are some hogs fed for Japan that they do put some additives in, and I don't know that it does anything, in my opinion, but if somebody believes it is and they want to pay for that,
I thought it was interesting. I'm like,
soy sauce or what?
I can't remember what it was. It was like a spice in the form of an oil, and they wanted that in the feed for certain hog contracts that were going to go for export to Japan. I mean, the meat was going to be exported to Japan.
I know there's some will put like oregano in the feed and
really,
yeah. And I don't know that it changes anything, in my opinion. Maybe somebody else can taste a difference. I'm not sure.
Once you feed some, and then we'll cook some up and see if we can tell.
I don't think so, because
right.
When I was a kid, we had a slop bucket, and if that affected the taste, I think we would have known back then.
Well, I remember the same thing. My, you know, when I was growing up, my grandparents had hogs on dirt lot and the table scraps for every meal went to the hogs, you know, and I don't know that they tasted any different.
No. All right. Well, it's always interesting to talk about that, your division. It always gets the most questions. Anytime we have different groups in and we talk about the pigs, they want to know lots of details about the pigs. Right. I think it'd be neat to take one of our commercial pigs and take it to a 4-H fair just to see, you know, how that would compare to what wins the 4-H fairs. But I think it would be...
We'll let Sal show that one.
Yeah.
Honestly, we have had some of our pigs shown at our county level. You know, our growers are, you know, one that has one. And if they've got pigs that'll be ready at that time, I mean, they have taken pigs and fed them out of our barns. And they're not show pigs.
No.
You know, they are commercially raised for meat, and they're not show pigs. They're going to be at the bottom of the class at the show. Yeah,
but they're the top of the class whenever it comes to market pig, though.
Yeah, what consumers want, that's what we raise.
All right. Well, Jeff, that's all I got. Do you have anything else?
I'm good. Thanks for coming in.
Well, appreciate it.
Dan, thanks for all you do. Appreciate everything that you do and the opportunities you give the growers. And I think we've got how many barns now?
There's actually we've got 15 sites with 23 buildings.
Wow, 23 buildings now.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's a lot of pigs.
Yep. We market about a little over 200,000 a year right now. So
wow, that's amazing.
Yep.
So well, thanks for all you do and for putting pork on our tables. And that wraps up another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. If you while listening to us, just please like and subscribe. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for having me.